Good morning, sir. What is your name, sir?
Richard Michael Webb.
And are you okay? I believe that the Honorable Mr. Lou Kiwanis will be conducting a hearing at this time, so just hang on and he will be with you shortly, sir.
Thank you.
Sir, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you state your full name and ADC number for the record?
Richard Michael Webb, DOC number 111593.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31-412A parole hearing to consider regular parole or absolute discharge or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing today. Of course, this is a telephonic hearing, and you cannot see us. We're having some technical issues with the video conference, but in the hearing room, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, our esteemed Board Chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing.
Okay.
I'll begin this hearing with a summary. Mr. Richard Webb, ADC number 11593.
11131.
Hold on a second. I have 111593.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So again, Mr. Richard Webb, ADC number 111593, 56 years old. He was considered eligible by the Arizona Department of Corrections for 31-412A, regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest.
Yes.
Crimes of dangerous drug violations committed while on release occurred on or about June 5th, 1992. He was approximately 30 years old at the time of the incident offenses. He was found guilty by jury trial on September 21st, 1994, and sentenced on October 26, 1994. His conviction was appealed and upheld on May 3rd, 1996. He's technically parole eligible effective October 26, 2018. The incident offenses were part and parcel of a three-count concurrent sentence of life imprisonment, which included misconduct involving weapons, the weapons charge, which has since expired, but the drug offenses were considered a life conviction. Fellow board members, I will say this gets confusing because Mr. Rapp was also sentenced to a five-count concurrent life sentence for aggravated robbery and kidnapping, of which I am speaking, of which he is not eligible for parole until March 9, 2019. That is to say, 4.5 months after his first eligibility for parole in 2018. Now, so you're going to say something? What did you say?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. It wasn't aggravated robbery. There's no aggravated robbery there.
Pardon me, sir, for that correction. That was a... when I write these... sometimes there's a misstep there, and it's aggravated assault, is it not?
Yes, I apologize for interrupting.
No, and I apologize for writing robbery. I think we've corrected each other on that one. I did mean to say aggravated assault and kidnapping, of which he is not parole eligible until March 9, 2019. Again, that is to say that 4.5 months after his first eligibility for parole in October 2018. He has a criminal history, which includes arrests for weapons violations, obstruction of police, and possession of stolen property, and convictions for possession of dangerous drugs and transportation of dangerous drugs, which resulted in probation. Does this sound correct so far, Mr. Rapp?
Yes.
Now, I think it is appropriate that we do cross-check each other a bit, because as I stated, this is an interesting hearing, inasmuch that you were certified by the Department of Corrections for parole, for regular parole, absolute discharge or home arrest, but there's this overlap of 4.5 months between two separate sets of counts. So do you have any commentary on that before we move forward?
As far as the overlap?
Yes.
No, I don't. I do have one question.
Go ahead.
Did you package from my family?
Absolutely. We have a nice package from your family of support letters.
Yes.
As well as, if I'm not mistaken, some certificates.
Yes.
For your programming.
Yes.
Was there anything else that we should have received?
No. I didn't really know what to do. No one really gave me an idea what I need to send or what I need to do, so I just kind of did it on my own.
Well, certainly that's at your decision, but it is good when individuals reach out and request letters of support. Sometimes we have individuals that actually attend the hearing and support you as well. So regardless of how this board votes today, that is also a consideration. You can have people who support this hearing in the hearing room.
All right.
I will read a summary of the offense in question. Just one second. According to the pre-sentence investigation on June 5, 1992, a drug investigation was being conducted by the Gila County Task Force in Mesa, Arizona, and it was learned that Richard Rapp and Dana Milligan were involved in the sale of methamphetamine from the room at the Dobson Ranch Inn in Mesa. While under surveillance, Mr. Rapp and Milligan left in their pickup truck and were stopped a short time later by an Arizona Department of Public Safety officer. During this stop, the defendant emerged from the passenger side of the vehicle holding a black bag, which he dropped. Found in the small of the defendant's back was a knife concealed under his shirt. In the black bag was found approximately $4,000 in currency and a bag containing 6.94 grams of methamphetamine. Found in the passenger seat of the vehicle was a .380 caliber handgun. Found in Milligan's purse was a small amount of methamphetamine. Also found in the vehicle was a cellular phone, pager, binoculars, scales, drug ledgers, and a calculator. A subsequent search warrant was executed for the rooms at the Dobson Inn where Milligan and Mr. Rapp were staying. After police arrived at the rooms, an individual later identified as Steve Weber knocked on the door and was holding a package of cigarettes that contained 6 grams of prepackaged methamphetamine in individual baggies. Weber was arrested. Found in the hotel room was over 200 grams of methamphetamine. So that's the short version of the drug offense. According to Mr. Rapp's institutional progress report, he has had considerable programming in ADC. He has a release plan which includes resources having money saved, which he has money saved and seeking work as a certified electrician. Does that sound correct, Mr. Rapp?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Rapp stated in his board hearing notification that he claims no need for programming or counseling when he gets released. He has had significant discipline in ADC from 1998 through 2017, with his last major on July 13, 2016, for drug possession. Note he had several majors for drug possession, plus a refusal to submit UA, threats, and assault. This appears to be his second hearing before the board, his last a special in 1995, in which he was granted parole to his next consecutive sentence. He's had numerous letters of support in his parole packet. So, with that summary in mind, Mr. Rapp, this is your first time before this board. As I stated, your last hearing was in 1995. So we'd like to get to know you. Can you tell us about the offenses that resulted in your incarceration? That is in your words, Mr. Rapp.
In my words, I'm guilty of everything I did. I've never blamed anybody. I always knew it was all me. history, being 27 years old. I've never been in trouble in my life. I was married with a child. I'm ex-military. We moved down here in 1984 to start a new life when I got out of the military because it was a construction boom. Because of the fast pace and all the construction, I got myself wrapped up in doing methamphetamines, and it basically ruined my life. I'm guilty. I mean, I personally participated in everything I did. But I just don't know how else to explain it. Is that I'm guilty of everything I did. I've never looked back in a situation where like, well, if this person caused this or this person caused that. No, it was definitely on me. I lost my family. I spent the first 21 years in prison. The only person I talked to was my mother. It took me turning things around a couple of years ago before I ever got my family back in my life. Because my mother died in July of 2016. And that's basically the point where I reached out. Because the guilt, I've been talking to my family now for a couple of years, and out of the guilt, but what I did is basically why I pushed most people out of my life from about 95 to 2016. I didn't talk to hardly anybody. It's just I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know how to, I wrote lots of letters. Seemed like all I had to do was just to do apology letters. I never reached out and acted like that this is somebody else's fault. My dictionary, I got life in 95, never been to prison before. It's just prison, things happen. There's no way for me to explain away my dictionary, because things happen. I don't know how much the board would know, but I'm actually, I'm at Lewis. I'm on a step down there, basically. I walked away from all that stuff about 2 years ago. And I've been listening to it pretty now since 2016. My last dictionary was away from mom and dad. And I've basically been trying to just turn things around. I'm 57 years old. I basically just want to go home with my family. My family's in the one place. I basically just want to go back and try to put back together the life that I wished I had. I got grandkids that love me to death. I talk to them constantly. I love to be there for them. Tell them not, show them what not to do. Just be there. I actually want to get into some sort of counseling. I actually do want to take programs because I actually want to take counseling. I'd like to, what I really like to do, because most of I've been told this my whole life, I like to talk to kids in schools. And I try to help start working drugs, the gangs, and just a lot of bad decisions. I can't say there's nothing like that as far as my cases. I was extremely hooked on methamphetamine. I couldn't turn it around. I didn't even see it until it was too late. And it wasn't until the first time I got clean in probably 7 years in county jail before I realized fully how bad it was. And my mom has just been doing my time in prison.
Well, Mr. Rupp, let me ask you a question. When it looks like you continued to use drugs inside the Department of Corrections, is that correct?
I did at times. There's big gaps in the years. I'm not going to lie. It's an ongoing process. I wish they had better drug programs in prison. It's an ongoing process of trying to constantly quit. I like to tell you now is I want to let my family back in my life. I've been clean since 2016. And the family support, I wish I had realized years ago that the family support, how important it was. My oldest daughter is 4 years old. She was 10 when this all kicked off. I have a younger daughter who's 32, who that basically don't know because of the drugs they left. They left here in Mesa to go back to Illinois in 1986. So she was a year and a half old. And I have a third child, a son, with a woman that was just born when I got arrested for this. And I basically have no contact with him because I have no contact with the mother. We went to a child separation hearing and had our parental rights severed, and I actually testified against the mother of my last child because she was still doing methamphetamines and I didn't want her to have custody. And it basically tore me and her apart, and it basically guaranteed I'd never see him either, but I just thought it was the best if I'm doing a life sentence to help to do whatever it took to get his life back on track without me in it. Because at that point I was looking at no less than 25 years, and I wasn't going to be a problem. And I wasn't going to let the mother of the child, who was never going to stop until she got arrested, I wasn't going to let her be a problem in his life either.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for being so honest about your life. You know, you answered some questions that I would ask delicately, because certainly some of those questions are just to get to know you. They're not necessarily deciding factors. I was going to ask if you said that you have a daughter that's 40 years old that you are in contact with.
Yes, that'd be Renee Lucky. That'd be one of the letters you have in front of you.
And the 32-year-old, you're not in contact with her?
No. I never knew her. Me, my first wife, her mother, we've been on the outs going back since 86, and she's made a point to make sure I can never contact her. But my oldest daughter, Renee, who's 40, she did spend 10 years with me, and she knows me. And we were in a relationship with someone she's wanted for a long time, but I didn't know how to do it. I just didn't know how to do it, to be honest with you. It's just, as each year went by, I was in prison. It just got harder and harder and harder. I never missed a birthday or a Christmas. I constantly wrote letters. But I just didn't know how to really put it all back together.
Also, I want to commend you for being open about the step-down issue. We're careful about how we ask questions regarding prison politics, because it often involves security, but you stated that you have stepped down. And am I correct that that was around the time that you also cleaned up from drug use?
That was 66 on another guy. I was on the step down yard in Cimarron, building one, and 6 weeks after my mother died, and I've actually been thinking about this for years, I just walked away. I just got up and left one day. I said, I'm done. I'm done with all this crap. I'm done with all the politics. I'm just done. And I just got up and left. And I actually started going through the process at that point. I spent a year and a half locked down. I've actually been here for almost 5 months at Buckley Unit.
You understand that some of the questions we ask are not some, this is not a trial, we're not trying to find.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to.
No, what I was going to ask you is you had some drug use inside prison. We understand that drugs continue to be available inside prison. We don't kid ourselves. But did you continue to use methamphetamine or did you get involved with something else?
No, I got involved with heroin. I hate methamphetamine so much because of it. I can't blame amphetamines for what I did, but it had a big part in my life. And I never even seen heroin in my life, so I was in the prison, and it was all. And that's basically where I went into heroin. And this has been a struggle. It's been a struggle for years. I'm not gonna sit and try to candy coat this. It's been a struggle for years. And well, part of the problem is I never had family support because I pushed everybody away.
Well, here's a straight question, only for your health, and that is, you're stating that you don't need programming or counseling, and
I actually do. When they asked me that question, they didn't know what to offer, and I actually asked specifically, don't write that down. That's not something you want to write down, because I expect counseling and some sort of guidance because of the amount of time I've done in prison.
Okay, so if this board says saw fit to release you to the community on regular parole or home arrest, you would submit to drug counseling?
Oh, everything. I actually want to take that as far as possible, because I really do want to spend the rest of my life talking to kids in schools. That's what I really want to do.
Talk to me a little bit about the aggravated assault and the kidnapping. That part is not available in this package. And again, as I stated, this isn't a trial and we're not adding new charges. But we don't have a lot of information regarding those, that separate set of concurrent charges. And it seemed to happen around the same time, but it didn't happen at the same time as the drug offense, correct?
The drug case was June 5th, 1992.
Yes.
I got in a car accident February 2nd, 1993. Had a lot of amphetamine in me. I got a head injury, it was a head-on collision for me. The accident actually wasn't my fault, but it was a head-on collision for me. And it led to me pulling a gun on some people at a church in Mesa, trying to get away, which led to the kidnapping charges and aggravated assault charges.
So were you out on release when that happened from the 1992 charges? Is that correct?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Yes, I was.
Thank you for helping me understand that.
Yes, I was actually on a bond that I wasn't supposed to have. I got on a bond that I wasn't supposed to have. And then then 8 months later is when I got in that car accident and that happened.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions. Any questions from fellow board members? Mr. Rep, we're getting close to the end of your hearing. At this point, and again, I recognize it's been a long time and you're new to the hearing process. Again, we do recognize that you have letters of support, and those are taken into consideration. It doesn't appear that you have anybody today that's going to be speaking on your behalf. Is that something that you attempted to do, or is this something that you're learning to do?
My family, being from Illinois, I had a 21-day notice of this hearing. They couldn't adjust their schedules just to fly out here, because I would have done it. But it wasn't possible. They all have jobs, and just 21-day notice wasn't enough for them to just take the time off to fly out here for this hearing.
Thank you, sir. Well, so we're getting close to the end of your hearing.
I'm sorry, just ask a question.
Yes, Dr. Wright.
I think you well have answered this, sir, but you don't have any family or supporters in the state of Arizona. Is that correct, sir?
No, I don't.
Zero. Okay, so
Zero. So
your family returned back to Illinois. They went back east after you were incarcerated.
Yes, if I was to make parole, I would ask for an out-of-state transfer to go to Illinois.
Okay. Have you thought about if you or when you make parole, have you thought about initially in halfway houses or anything of that nature out here in Arizona since you don't have any family out here, sir?
21 days ago, I didn't realize I had a parole hearing coming. The paperwork I got doesn't even show it coming up like this. I actually didn't believe I had a parole hearing coming until 2019.
So it was only 21 days ago that you learned that your hearing was going to take place at this time. Okay. Well, I understand, but I don't understand, but I do understand the dilemma that would place you in.
Here's what happened. A counselor opened up my door named Hayes, and the first words out of his mouth was, "So if you make parole, where are you going to live, where are you going to work?" I've not been asked that question in 25 years, and I was like, "What?" I said, "What? What are you talking about?" He says, "You got a parole date coming up." And at that point, we went to his office, and that's when he filled out the paperwork. He says, "Well, what about programming?" I said, "I need programming." He says, "Well, that's not the way the question is asked." He says, "But I'll just write down for right now, you don't need no programming." I said, "I'd rather you leave that blank than like that in there," I told him. My exact words, "I'd rather leave that blank." He said, "Why gotta write something in here. And 21 days ago, sir, it's just, I didn't have a clue to put much thought into it.
Well, let me just ask this, sir. I do take note, as the Honorable Mr. Kiwanis has indicated already, that you do have a number of certificates that you've accumulated over the years, and we really want to commend you for those programs that you've been involved in. Whether you were here, if and when you're released, whether you remain here in Arizona or you back in Illinois, what do you specifically, I know you haven't had too much time to think about it, but what do you plan to do in terms of employment? I mean, do you plan to, what area do you have an expertise in? I guess that's what I'm trying to ask.
Well, I'm a general electrician, but I really want to change my life into being a counselor for kids. I really want to travel around the state of Illinois and talk to kids in school. Most of the certificates that you see, I've taken them in the other office. Every CO3 counselor with every one of those classes always insinuated to me that you'd probably be a very good teacher. And I've always thought about it. And I've been on that thought for over 10 years. That I would really love to go talk to kids. I would work wherever I got to work just to survive. I guess if that's what you mean. I doubt anybody would want to hire a 57-year-old general electrician in Illinois at this point, because I haven't worked in 25 years in that field. But I would do whatever was asked of me. But my ultimate goal is that I want to talk to kids.
Have you had any employment since you've been incarcerated here in Arizona, you know, at any of these institutions? Have you had any jobs at all, sir?
Yes. I was complex electrician in 97-98 in Kyabad and Winslow. I've had jobs basically the whole time I've been in. I'm a barber on our yard right now where I'm at.
Well, so you do have some expertise right now as a barber. That's always some opportunities, I would assume, out in the communities. People always want to get their hair cuts or something done to the. So you already have some expertise, sir. That's something that you.
Yeah, I just didn't really put much thought into it, to be honest with you. I'm not going to tell you something. Like I said, 21 days ago, there wasn't much thought into this. I just came over to the step down there 5 months ago. I'm just trying to readjust into a new life in prison right now. I totally walked away from all the politics, like I said, 2 years ago. And I got here the second week of February. And we're right now at the end of June. I'm still trying to get a hold of what I need to do just to get to doing this type of time.
Well, my next question is, and you don't have to answer it, because as Honorable Scarlett said, that we try to stay away from prison politics. But where are you now in terms of the step-down program, or if you feel comfortable in telling the board, are you beginning towards the middle or almost complete with the step-down, sir?
I completed what I needed to complete to be here, or they wouldn't allow me to come here.
Okay.
I basically did a little over a year in the hole. I had to go through a series of tests and polygraphs to show that I was sincere about what I wanted to do. And if you don't pass the polygraph, you can't get here. I did pass the polygraph. I passed all the tests and I passed all the interviews. And that's basically what got me here in the first place. And then I'm basically here until the day I'm ever released.
Okay. Sometimes we ask questions we already know the answer, so I'm going all the way back. So now, I apologize for that. So what branch of the military you were in, when were you in the military, sir?
I joined the military. I went into the delayed entry program in October of 79. I actually entered the military the second week of January 1980. And I believe I was released in somewhere around October of 1982 on general discharge. My wife, I was stationed in Fort Stewart, Georgia. My wife hated it. She didn't like the fact that she didn't know anybody down there. And after about two and a half years in the military, she left me with my oldest daughter, Renee. You can't be a single parent in the military at that time, I went back to post and told my commanding officer that my wife left. Wasn't it the child, she took our child down to the neighbors, because I was living out in the swamps of Georgia, and I didn't know what to do. They, at that point, they started processing out on hardship, which became a general. I didn't do nothing wrong. It's just that you couldn't be a single parent. During that time, the military had a really bad rap. Right after the Vietnam War, they were promoting family. That's basically what led me to the military in the first place, because I was a young man, a child. That's where I got my electrical skills from. But once we got there, my wife was miserable. She couldn't stand it. She spent her whole life in a small town in Illinois. And all of a sudden, I landed her in a whole new state with people she didn't know. And she was up and left. But I left in good standing. I like the military. If I could, I probably would have made a career that if it wouldn't have happened the way it did.
We're sorry it happened the way that it did, but I do understand. Now, Fort Stewart, that's somewhere down there, Augusta, Georgia, somewhere. Is that where Fort Stewart is?
It's right above Savannah, Georgia.
Right between Savannah and Augusta.
It's probably about 50 miles northwest of Savannah. I was in the 97th Engineer Battalion.
Okay. So, I mean, I haven't been in the military, but basically, you had a general discharge. You were not.
No disciplinary, no discipline, no none of that. Things were clicking along until, I mean, I was a 20-year-old young man with a 3-year-old daughter, and it was just one struggle after another. I tried to make the best of it. I even tried to stay. You couldn't stay in the military as a single parent. I actually fought for it, and my CO was tried everything in his power to do it, and it just wasn't possible.
I guess this will be my final question. You know, you're an intelligent gentleman, and I want to believe that you were an intelligent gentleman. Oh, you were young at the time when these offenses were committed. Aside from your family situation with your wife and so forth, how did you end up in criminal ways, sir? How did you end up in committing crimes, I guess is what I'm trying to understand, sir?
I guess, if you look at my history, all up to me being 27 years old, I was never in trouble in my life. I got out here to these job sites. I started working for a company called B&B Electric, and I worked for Lackey Electric. And there was a lot of drugs on those job sites, and I started doing methamphetamines, and it just anesthetizes your brain after a point. You don't think right. Your priorities get all screwed up. You don't even see it when it's happened. And next thing you know, it went from me doing methamphetamine to selling methamphetamine. Just to keep my habit up. That's the actual truth. And I lost my family out of it, and it just led to one bad decision after another. And it probably took me almost a full 2 years in county jail for my mind to even come close to starting to realize what I did. Because that's basically guilt setting, and I basically pushed all my family away.
Well, thank you so very much, Mr. Rapper. Pleasure of speaking with you, and you are an intelligent person, and you have a future before you at some point, sir. So thanks again. Thanks so much, Honorable Mr. Kowanis, for this opportunity, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Any further questions
from your
board members? Okay, Mr. Rapp, I do want to add to that I do appreciate your service. I think it's a tragedy that things didn't work out the way you had hoped at that time, especially if you're considering that as a career. I'm just counting back, too, because I have a brother that was part of the Army during that post-Vietnam era, and I know that the Army was struggling a bit. Was that the home of the 24th Mechanized?
Yes, 24th. I don't know what it is now, but back then it was the 24th Infantry Mechanized.
And I also want to commend you for being so straightforward. That's meaningful. So we're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us, but this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand?
I just want to put this behind me. I want to go home. Hello, man.
Okay, sir.
No, I'm just for emotional commitment. 2 years ago,
system. I find him very accountable. I hear his story about his sentencing and where he was at that time. I think it's one of those tragedies that I also remember quite a bit of around that era, where it seemed that some unlikely people were getting involved in some heavier drugs. I remember very similar stories with cocaine around that same time, people that really surprised me. That were exposed to cocaine through whatever circles they were running in, and ended up with some serious drug problems and going down some roads that I would have never thought they would. I'm inclined to believe that he was an individual that was doing a job and probably strongly thought it was to his advantage to have a stimulant in him to work more harder, and before he knew it, he was knee-deep in a drug addiction. And I'm not going to dismiss that he has the aggravated assault or kidnapping issues. It just seemed to be all happening around the same time in his life. So I'll just sort of begin the discussion at a very direct point. And this is what I meant about positivity. I believe he's on a very good trajectory, and it's not my position to kill the hope of an inmate. I believe he's, with him having gotten off of drugs only 2 years ago and being fresh in the step-down program, that he is on the right path, that he's definitely a hopeful for consideration. I think it may be a bit early. Problem number two is a bit more technical, and that is, if I'm reading this correctly, I don't think there's been any change that he is eligible for parole until March 9, 2019. And again, not to put this on him, I think that was his understanding too, if you look at the dates. So I will say, I don't think he's ready for general parole or home arrest at this time, but I do believe that he is on a very good trajectory. But that's where I'll begin. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
I agree with you, Mr. Quinones. I think that in meeting his grandchild or being involved in his grandchildren's life, Mr. Rebel now realizes he has something to live for and be responsible for. And I also like the fact that he's being very honest and direct with the board. I think something he might want to think about now that he's got more than 21 days, you know, he's had 21 days and a couple hours here to think about this, is in the event the board did grant release, but maybe like home arrest, that he would have some plans put together to be able to be released to Arizona and then ultimately transition to Illinois, but maybe start out here. I think just with a little bit more planning, you know, in his mind, in his own mind, so he can be ready and step back into life gradually. But I definitely, like you, I really like what I'm hearing from him. Thank you, Mr. Kinnear.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. Any other comments from board members? Hearing no further comments from fellow board members, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion, and that is regarding Mr. Richard Rep, ABC number 111593. My motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest, and I will ask fellow board members if the 1 year set off is appropriate. I'm looking at the dates right now for when his next meeting. What's that?
I'm thinking no. Let's see.
Well,
he's not eligible.
He's not eligible to March. To March of 19. Okay, I'll say no because he's coming eligible for parole in March of 19 anyways.
Right.
That gives him an opportunity to consider his plans for possible home arrest. Or a regular parole, which we know is going to be in Arizona when that day arrives. And so I won't ask for 1 year set off. We'll keep him on DOC's 6 month cycle, so to speak. So my my motion is to, and I'll check now, deny regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, and that is my motion.
Second. Agree.
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 Okay, I'll check that box. And my reasons are as follows. I think because aggravated assault and kidnapping is commingled, I'll say serious and violent offense. The victims is appropriate. Any rejection? He does have a violation of previous probation, history of continued substance abuse, history of assaultive behavior, prior criminal history, recent disciplinary infraction, and that is, I'm making reference to his last major in 2016, which is only 2 years ago. History of assaultive behavior inside DOC. And that would be my only reasons. Does anyone have anything to add? Okay, Mr. Rep, did you hear our vote?
Yes, I did.
Okay, I'm serious when I state, and I'll say it to you directly, but I hope you hear the positivity of this. This is a process. This is your first time before the board. We recognize that there's the March 19 date, so we did not ask for a one-year set-off, and we're encouraging you to take advantage of this time to pursue any programming inside DOC, such as Narcotics Anonymous, and to put together a plan for your safe return to the community. Do you have any questions?
I do want to let you know that on my level 4 yard, they offered nothing. There is not one program offered on this yard, not NAAA. Only offered on this yard is GED and mandatory. That's it.
Well, I will say that we're not holding you to that. It's a recommendation. If you're saying it's not available to you, that's understandable.
I actually asked when I got here. I wanted to join the moment I got here, and it's not offered.
Okay, sir. So then we are denying parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. We do wish you the best, and we look forward to seeing you again on this board in the coming months.
So my next parole will be in March.
DOC will determine that date. We recognize they have their own calculations, but it would be approximately 6 months from now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Would you put the 03 back on, sir?